and say a warm welcome to Elizabeth Brunning. She is assistant professor teaching social pedagogy at Oslo and Akershus University College of Applied Sciences. So she's also had a long way to come here together with her colleague Jan, who you heard yesterday evening. And she's using a lot of aesthetic methods in her teaching. So there's a lot of drama, creativity, and clearly hand puppets that are involved in teaching social pedagogues some of the aesthetic, creative skills of how to interact with children and people. So thank you very much, Elizabeth, for coming and speaking to us about it. And thank you, all of you, for creating your little hand puppets. Can we all have it anyway?
My name is Elizabeth Brunning, and I have for years been teaching aesthetical methods at the Child Welfare Program at the Oslo and Akershus University College, University of Applied Sciences. My background is that I grew up in Tromsø, which is a city very north in Norway, beyond the Arctic Circle. And I started very early to work with drama, children theater, and also with puppet theater at an institution called Tromsø Barne Children and Youth Theater. So this was for me, from when I was a child and a youth, a hobby, you know, something I did in my leisure time. I made puppets, I played with them, I made the plays, and made performances. I also took my preschool education in Tromsø and worked in kindergarten, first in Tromsø and later in Asker outside Oslo, where I live now. In 1983, I moved to Oslo in order to take drama as an extra education on top of my preschool teaching education. And by chance, I was very lucky to meet the woman that asked me if I would like to share the drama teaching she used to do at the Child Welfare Program. So I have actually been working with this since 1984, and it has developed into different methods you can use within social pedagogy. While I was doing this, I was also making performances for children in school and also in kindergartens. I will come a little bit back to that later, because these two fellows here, they are my pals from that time. But some of the students had got an ear that I was actually working with puppets and playing with them. So one of the students asked me, why don't we have a puppet course, you know, here in this education? So that is how it started. And it has developed, and for me, it has been important to see that puppets can be a tool in the professional dialogue with children and young people. And today, when I'm going to talk with you, we have this hour, and you are also going to play with your puppets, I will emphasize on how you can use the puppet as a tool in the dialogue between yourself with the puppet and another person, a child, for instance. Just to give you an idea about where you must have your focus and how it actually creates a focus. I will also come back to the focus, because I think that is very important. And then I will talk about also the other two, the reflecting puppet theater. And maybe we can manage to get into that a little bit as well. So why puppets, and why this playful approach? This is a part of an aesthetical learning process. So a lot of my theories and thinking and, you know, is also based very much in this. But it is also based in philosophy, the ethic of the dialogue, and of course also in psychology, and also we have in our education, we have courses, we have special courses in dialogue and communication that follows the students all the way through their education. So a lot of literature and references towards the dialogue as a phenomenon, the professional dialogue with children. So I will bring in some of these, I will bring this into to my presentation, but I will talk, I will act, I will make you act, because I have seen a lot of wonderful puppets coming into this room, and I just must say that I was a little bit, it's always a little bit nervy to come and speak for an hour and meet an audience and speak in English and so on. But when I came down here this morning and saw all the people walking around with their puppets, and I thought, oh, I am among friends, you know. And now I see that there are a lot of puppets. So I will make this hour also interactive, because then you can actually try out and see that some of this playfulness actually works. I think that when you work with children and young people and you use this playful approach, you can achieve a lot. And if you take it seriously, that play is the language of children. And as Vygotsky says, that a child gets one head higher than itself in play. Then we must take it seriously and try to communicate with children on their own territory. In this play, and which this is something that children are very used to actually have when they play, that they actually use whatever they need for what they need in their play. So this pair of glasses can easily be a submarine or a snake or whatever they need it for. So this is something we use in puppet theater also, that we give soul and voice and we make them come alive. So this blue guy, my blue Maasai, he was in Africa last. Yes, you liked that, didn't you? I loved it. So, you know, this is something that children also do. They play with things. And they make them come alive. And I think that this is something we will do in this room today, to see that it actually happens. When I start the puppet workshop at home, we have 6 days. And I always start with making the students, they make their own puppets. And this is Marianne. And the students have called these kinds of puppets. They are not hand puppets, you know, and they are not rod puppets. They are a puppet with a head with sheep wool. It's a sock here, I'm sorry. It's a sock here with a lot of rice in it. And there is a stick in the head that makes it actually possible for the puppet to sit, and the stick makes it sit upright. And the students, they have completely fallen in love with these kinds of puppets. And I think it has something to do with the bodiness of them, you know, that you can actually hold them like this. But you can also act with them in the puppet play. Obviously, you made puppets today, and it took you not such a long time. But when the students are making puppets, we have a long table. We might be 20 people, even 25. And we have a lot of materials and things on the table. You know, all the things you might need to make a puppet. And the first steps when you start to make a puppet, you activate your silent dialogue within your head, you know. Who was it that said to me when I came this, you know, this morning when I was feeling nervous and he had this puppet and he said, they actually have gender, he said, you know. And yes, and the gender comes with this silent dialogue. You start with making a head and you put those two eyes on this head and it's looking at you and it's waiting for more. What comes next? And in this process, the students are talking with this puppet, you know. Do you want yellow hair? Should I have brown eyes? No, it doesn't fit with the green eyes, maybe I need some brown ones. They look at each other, they get ideas, and so forth. So the puppet comes alive to be a puppet, but it takes time. And I think in this time, the students, they get in contact with their own childhood and with their way of thinking, with their way of using the silent dialogue in this process, and they know that the silent dialogue was also very important in the play itself when they played. And the silent dialogue we later use when we are making the puppet play, because the silent dialogue when you use a puppet is giving the puppet the direction it needs to have. It gives an idea about what it is going to do, how it is going to move, where it's going to look at, you know, what it's going to look at, and so forth. So I thought that, I think that it is very important that the students actually make their own puppets. And they come in contact with what I think is a skill that you must have if you work with children and young people in social pedagogic work, the capacity to play. I say that play for a social pedagogue is a competence. And that the playful approach and the play together is a competence that is of great value. And that you then can be on the territory of the children and young people, and that it has no age limit at all. You know, I think that you will maybe experience this when you are going to try your puppets in a little while, that you forget about how age and how old you are, or am I stupid, or what am I doing, and how could I say that? You are just doing it. So I think also, you said yesterday that in Denmark you have all these methods coming from the West, or from wherever they come, with manuals, you know, and then you can be very hung up if you have a lot of manuals. It can be very efficient, can be very good, very useful, but it can also be, for some people, they cannot free themselves from the manuals. They cannot be themselves, and then you are half in it. And I think that when you are half in it, you are not yourself, you are not communicating, or you are not in dialogue as you could be if you let yourself go, trust yourself, and your ability to actually improvise and to use your fantasy, and all the skills you have learned and all the theories can come alive while you are actually doing this. And that's why I thought that puppets could be a good tool for our child welfare workers, you know, because we know that from the aesthetical methods, that when you can use an aesthetical method to have a little bit of distance from what is a difficult thing in a child's life, a difficult team, difficult life situation, a lot of things that the child find it very difficult to put into words. Sometimes they don't even know how to put it into words. Or it can be things that happen to them long before they actually have a language. So they have never spoken about it. So how then can we try to use puppets as a tool in making the child being able to comfort with what needs to be said? So all these things I hope we can get into in between, that I will be showing you a little bit, I will be looking into my papers, you will be working with your, or communicating, or dialoguing, or talking, or whatever, with your puppets. We'll also be working with, or looking into metaphors, because metaphors and metaphor stories is a very important part also of the reflecting puppet theatre. And it has this, what shall I say, similarity to fairy tales, which is something we all grew up with, and it is in a way a pattern in our life, that we know that there is something starting off a story, there are conflicts, there are things that has to be solved during the conflict period in the fairy tale or in the metaphoric story. But there is one very important thing, and that it is the happy ending. And the happy ending is also an important thing in working with children and young people or families or any group of people, really. Because the happy ending creates hope. And I hope that we can go into the philosophy of the hope, you know, what is a hope for humans, you know, as an utterance of life, I think Lerkstrup would call it. That actually we need to bring hope into our dialogue and our communication with children and young people. And it is not only the children and the young people that need to feel hope. I think also social workers, child welfare workers, people in schools, kindergartens, if they have difficulties, they also need to feel that there is a hope, that things can be going in a better direction. So I think that can give you inspiration to keep on and to go on with your work. Are you all working? Waiting on to maybe start to work a little bit with your puppet. There are so many words I could say, but I think I will just start so you also can start to do something with your puppets. There has been a lot of talk about ice, also in this morning. And just to say that in the ethical side of the dialogue, from Emmanuel Levinas, he says that ethic is optic. It is all about learning to see. And I think that I think that is one of the main things you need when you are communicating or speaking or listening or whatever. You need to use your eyes to see what is there in front of me. What am I seeing? What do I sense when I see this? Do you follow me? What makes an impact on me? What moves me? And to be moved is also one of the things I wish we could talk about in the end of this session. To create hope, but also to be moved and to move. Because this is something I think we can also use these puppets as a tool in moving, because puppets, they are very good at expressing feelings. Yes, so we can try this a little bit. And then back to the eyes. One of the most important things on the puppet, I think, would be the eyes of the puppet. Because when it looks at you, you look back. Yeah. And when you look at the puppet and I ask you, what's your name? I didn't hear. Gainer. Gainer. Never heard that before. Nice name. You see, then I can use the eyes to look at you and you will answer. But I can also use the puppet's eyes to look back at me, the puppet player, saying to me, without saying it, the silent dialogue. Did you hear that, Elizabeth? It was a difficult name. I've never heard it before. What did you say? You know? So the eyes of the puppets, they make a focus. It's you and I, in a way, through this one. But the eyes can also take the message silently and give it to me and go back to you. And we don't have to talk about this because we see it. And when you talk with a child then, with a puppet, and you use the eyes of the puppet to look at the child, to send the message back to the puppet player or the social worker or, you know, then you know that I know. So we all know, but you are still talking to the puppet. Then we use a puppet as a third fellow player, my colleague, in the dialogue. And the eyes are very important to keep us together. The puppet will also create a focus. Yes? And the focus is important because there are so many people out of focus, I think. Children, they are all like this, and they have too much in their life, and they can't sit still, and they can't, you know, they can't get into something. But the puppet might be keeping them focused, because it's curious, you know. A woman coming there with a puppet in her bag, placing it on the table between her, herself, and the child. So I think the child would also be curious, you know. And then it is very, very difficult to actually deny the contact that a puppet demands just by looking. So I think now, can you take off your puppets and try this?
I feel a bit heartless now that I break up this playful room, but I just want to go on a little bit, and I also want you to play more, and I want you to get hold of a little bit of other parts that are important when you play with puppets, and that differs from playing with dolls, you know, because playing with puppets, it's the projected play. You know, and when you work with puppet theaters and puppets, you will see that there are other things as well that we can use, and that is very useful to strengthen this dialogue and to use the puppet as a method. I need to put my glasses on, but I'm writing at the moment, trying to write something about the playful approach. Because I was so inspired and happy, really, because I was in Africa, in Tanzania, in the autumn, and I met there a group of young people from 16 till 23 years old. They were 13 in the group. They were organized and put together from a center we work with in Tanzania, in Tanga. It's called Tanga International Competence Center. It's run by a Norwegian woman, and she works with the local authorities within social pedagogic work, health work, nurse work, you know. And there are also a lot of Norwegian students there taking their internships, or with our students they do a project period there. And I'll make it, the story, it's a longer story, but I'll make it short, because then I had agreed with the students that if it was something we could do together, we should try to work with puppet theater towards the theme of dropping out of school. And my thought was that I was there also the year before, and there are kids dropping out of school, and I thought that maybe to make puppet plays and play them for the children and also for the teachers could be a possibility to come forth with a discussion, a reflection about this, you know. So that was my thought when I was in my desk in my office in Oslo. But when I came to Tanga, I met this group of young people, and the students had only met them and had actually interviewed them as well, because that was a part of the project about you know. What do you think of your situation, your life? What do you think you will do in 5 years' time? What are your dreams, etc.? And it was really quite depressing, because some of the answer was that we don't know what we do in 5 years' time. We don't even know if we are alive in 5 years' time, you know. So the students were thinking, whew. And then, of course, the plans totally changed, because we started to work with this group of youngsters. And we made a puppet workshop. And I had brought some materials from me from home, but I also bought some stuff in Tanga, so it would be some of the local things. So I bought brooms, you know, all kinds of brooms in the market. I bought spoons made of coconut shells, etc., you know, because you can really make puppets from anything you have. And when we started, they had never done anything like this. And there were 7 boys and 6 girls, and the students. And I had a Maasai as my prince, actually, the chief's son. And he could speak English, so he translated into Swahili, and he just grasped the ideas of Papa. So he was not only a translator, you know, an interpreter. He became an assistant. He made puppets. He played with puppets. He was a great man to work with. But what happened? We started to make the puppets, and the room just came alive, just like you now. And some of the boys, they started to dance around with their roots, you know, being hip hoppers, and that inspired them to write the text. A hip-hop text, you know. And the singing in between was Midali, Midali, and Midali is puppet in Swahili. So it was magic to see what happened to this group. I had 4 evenings with them, or 4 days, short days, but we made puppets, we started to play with them, and they could also perform their rap at a big meeting at the center for all the other people there. And they got a lot of sharing, like you did in the morning when you were doing this game. I don't think they had ever had any sharing in their lives. But to make the story short, you know, the project didn't happen as I thought in my desk in Oslo. But the reports are coming to my desk that this group, they are now playing puppet theater for the pupils in the school that they themselves dropped out of. And they are assistants for nurse students, for healthcare students, and they make play also to tell about how you should brush your teeth. So the toothbrush is an important thing. And they have also been working with the nurse students in making a puppet play about AIDS and HIV, you know. But now they are also coming and playing for the children in Tanga City. And they are smiling, they are happy, they have joined an English course. 3 of them have gone back to school as well. So, you know, it's a story about that the playful approach and the playfulness, and to make them actually do something and have fun and create something, it was a kickoff for, I think, that they will now have hope for themselves that they can do something in the future. So that really inspired me to go more deep into play, you know, because it's always been the focus that I consider play as a competence for anybody working with children and young people. But then I really saw that play and the playful approach in all culture has no limit, can be used, and it is about just doing it, acting it out, and see what happens, and let things that you have learned, your skills, your theories, be guiding you into what direction can I take this. So I want to go back and work with this, the best camp group, they call themselves. And that is a metaphor, the best camp group. It's full of hope. So I want to go back to them and work with them and see if we can make the children in school go to their grandparents and people in the villages. There are 3 small villages around there. And get hold of the old stories. And that the best camp group can learn more about what is puppet play, you know, how to play with puppets, how to make it spooky, how to make it funny, how to, you know, to really get it more into their hands and give the children back the stories that they collected from the older people in the villages, and to make it more into a performance, you know, not dealing with any problems, but just a performance for joy and for sharing the culture and what has happened, you know, in the community for maybe ages before and after and in the future maybe. So this is for me a project that I really hope to be able to work a little bit more with. I saw it now in the room that I read a book now, it's called Play. I work with it, and because it's written in a way, I love it. And Jan said something about it yesterday, can you write a book without brackets, you know? And this is a book, I think, quite out of brackets, because he is an expert on play, and he just writes. And the language, I love it so much. And he writes that in this book about how play shapes the brain, opens the imagination, and invigorates the soul, and how we in play find basis of all arts and the vital essence of life and what makes life lively. And this I felt I met in Africa in this 14 days of work there. So it has been really, his book has inspired me a lot. I wanted now to share with you a little bit more of the magic of puppet play. As I said, the eyes, they are important. You saw that when you played, didn't you? That you use the eyes and it makes a direction. So the eyes, they are important to make this contact. One puppet, you know, when I hold it up, you will be looking at it. So it keeps the focus. And as a puppet player, you know that to keep the focus where you want the focus to be, you must look at your puppet and not everywhere else, because if I play with him like this, you don't know where to look. Are you going to look at me or are you going to look at him? So I must have my eyes on Anton. I used to say that the students, they can present themselves with a puppet without using so many words. Because puppets, they are good at showing feelings. And you can easily, with a puppet, arrange it so that it is a little bit far from you. I don't know if you can see me, but you can actually, I don't know if you can stand up like this, but you can use your knee, you know, you can, no, I don't think so. I can use a chair here to put one foot on. I don't know if you can see it, but just as an example, you know, that you can use your body as a stage, you know, you don't need a stage, you can just use your body, use your knee, use your lap, use your hand, like this. And if you have this little guy, and you can arrange him, so he can lie there, you know, and yeah, he's lying there. And you can then approach him and say, hello, Anton, what is it with you today? What is it? Don't you want to talk with me at all? What is it then? Too many people. Oh, I see. But Anton, you have done this before. You know that they are very nice people, and they have made a lot of puppets, and they like to use them as well, you know. And I was thinking I was going to use you to show them a little bit. Can you come a little closer to me? Okay then. So, okay. I got him up from the knee. I can have him in my hand. You know, I can use this. I mean, just that I am holding him in my hand. I care for him. I don't have to say this, but a child will see this. How I treat him. I let him have time. I don't grab him. I take him carefully. I hold him. I make him look at me. If he has a tear, I can, you know, if he's sad, I can comfort him. I can change my hand from sitting like this to just sitting like this, so I can turn him around. I can put him here. I can comfort him. I can let him whisper something in my ear, if that's easier. You know, all these things, small things. But you see, you keep the focus. The child will look at this. And you will give a lot of, you could present yourself as a person that can listen, that care, that take it serious. You know, all these things. And maybe that is better than
saying to a child that you can tell me everything, you know, because I'm, you know, maybe you can just show it. And let it sink into the child or even a young person if you use the puppet like that. You saw that I don't do a lot of movements. I try to keep it quite clean and straight. And I try to keep a direction. I think a lot of the magic in puppet theater, it is using the eyes, of course, because you see that the eyes make you see where I want you to see, where you want you to look. And this view of the eyes that I can also bring back to me in the dialogue, something that another person told me just by silently using this eye contact. But in puppet play, you have directions. You know where you are going. You know what you are looking at. You know what kind of movements you will do. You try when you, it's easier maybe to show you on this one. You know, if you are going to express something about a sad guy, you don't make him come in like this. It doesn't fit, you know. So if he is a sad guy with a bad morning, make him look like that. And it takes time to walk like that. Yes, it does. But if this guy is in love and has met the woman of his life in the reception, he would be coming like this. Ooh! And then I am trying to express a feeling in this body, in this stick I'm holding here, through my hand, and what tempo I actually make him come in into the room is what you see. And that makes your fantasy spinning, you know. Why is this guy coming flying into the room like that? I'm in love. And then you get, that's exactly what I could see, you know. So it you confirm it, you know, you can see. So, of course, children, that is the first language they learn. They learn everything about things happening in the world, how they are held, how they are guided. They can read you as a book, you know. They can immediately spot if you have a bad day. And they can just come silently and pat you. And then they go on again. Because they just keep on playing, but they saw that you had a bad day. So body language is a language they know. And body language is the essence also of puppet play. Because you don't need the words, really. Because they are recognized. And you just have to find this body language within yourself. You can't read about it. You must go into yourself. And you have to decide how you want to express that your puppet has hurt its knee, or has heartache, or is angry, or is spooky, or whatever. You have to find a tempo for this. The face is the same. So it doesn't change the face. So whatever you want to express, it is the body language and the direction and the tempo of how you do this. So, you need some water.
No, I have some water.
So, how can we use this as a tool in the dialogue? In a minute, no, I will let you play and try this yourself. You know, when you are using a puppet like that, and you can have it on the table, like the rice puppet, or this one, or a hand puppet, just an animal, you have a little teddy bear, whatever you have, you know, you can use anything. You give them something extra, I think, to the dialogue, because you give it, you slow it down. But it's not boring. You are not talking slowly. It's just that you are slowing it down. Because you are showing something at the same time. And I think that in this chaotic world, where children have so many inputs and they have so difficulties in being still. But something that is slowed down a bit, and they can sense it, they can see it, they can activate, you know, their brain, their fantasy. What do they see in front of them? And the slower tempo makes it possible for the child to grasp what you are talking about. Or if you are playing a story, which you will be doing in a little while, to get the whole story. Because I have met when I was playing with them, traveling around with these rice puppets in kindergartens, and you meet those children that has always got an adult behind her or him. You know, the extra person being hired in the kindergarten to look after that wild thing, you know, never on place. Yeah, you have seen them, yes? And the children, they are always like that, you know. And I was in the kindergarten playing with this kind of puppet. I was sitting in front of the children. I had one box with a lot of shining or, you know, materials that could easily just be pulled off that box, with my six puppets in front of me. And I knew this little boy, he was five, always like that. And then he was sitting right in front of me, this far, you know, from the puppets. And he was sitting there gazing for 45 minutes without moving, never trying to touch anything. And then I think it was the first time in his life that he actually got a story from A to B, to the end, you know. And the people working with him saw him too. And they were amazed to see him sitting there, really grasping the stories. So they got an idea about that when they were talking to him, when they were reading, they should use something extra, not only the words, but something that the children could look at and sense and follow the story with just small items, and it would help, because it slowed down the tempo. And you don't really need to understand the words themselves. You see what is happening. And you can sense it, the feelings in the story, because you have experienced those senses or those feelings yourself. So, the tempo, try to think now in the story you are all going to work with. I want it to be silent. So, you have to concentrate, not on what to say, but you can plan the story together. We're going to make a little story. It's going to be a beginning that something is happening. Then, there is an obstacle, there is something that disturbs this harmony or the beginning of the story, and there should be a happy ending, must be a happy ending. You can be three and three in the group. You are going in your play to at least show three different feelings. So, an example, you can have a couple meeting, they fall in love, there is a person coming in, snatching your man, and there is one left over, and then you have to find a good ending, happy ending. You know, then you have involved a lot of feelings here. So just find anything. Somebody who hurt their knees, somebody who can't walk because their back are too bad, whatever. Just make a story with three different feelings, a little bit of drama in the middle, and a happy ending. Okay? I have 10 minutes left. Okay, so, can you do this in a very short time? can we use the last minutes to sum up a little bit? I was thinking about this question I asked in the beginning about hope. And what I think you did now is how you can start to work with reflecting puppet theater, actually creating a story, maybe on the basis of something you find that can be present in a child or a young person's or a family's or whatever life in a child group, in a classroom, in the kindergarten, you know, that there might be things that you cannot solve with the language itself, but you can make a play and you can make this starting point, the conflict and the good happy ending with some obstacles and problems in it that are solved, you know, and maybe you have a hero that solved these problems, you know. So you use all the things you know from the fairy tales. And when you use a metaphoric tale that you have to create it yourself, you have to use your fantasy to improvise. Nobody tells you what you can play, but you can, you know how these stories are built up. You have a, this is a, also a competence you have. And I was just going to say that you might not have puppets. No, you have your sucking, the socks and the puppets, and they are beautiful, and I see they talk. But you know, you can also include metaphoric, you know, symbols in your metaphoric stories. This is a mother and a daughter. My two old, this one was hidden under the snow for one winter, so it looks very scrappy. But you know, when you move this puppet, this object, like this, yeah, the whole room gets quiet, you see? You know, you identify with this naked person, don't you? Yeah. So it's a vulnerable thing, this one. This one is not, it's the same kind of thing, it's a brush, but it can come in totally different, and I have added this material, so it's not such a naked thing as this one. So you see, in a metaphoric tale like you play now, you can use almost anything. Like this, for instance, the black love here. A hand is a hand, human hand, but as soon as you put a glove on it, it can start to be something totally different. Depends what you do with it, doesn't it? And there is a little piece in the fairy tale about Snow White, when this mad queen, you know, when she's there in the mirror, and she gets the message, she can't stand it. And it says in the text that the weed started to grow in her heart, you know. And then, I mean, if you have this glove, and if you have a piece of red material, and you just let this weed squeeze that heart, all the children will know what this jealousy is. It's not the jealousy that you have something I don't have, it's the dangerous jealousy. It's strong. So in this way you can actually make the story more, what shall I say, make it more clear, make it dramatic, make it sad, make it happy, just by including also the symbolic forms, things we know something about. I have a family here, just very short, a fork, you know, a fork and a spoon, two different forms, shapes. In aesthetical, you know, learning processes, it's a lot about the shape, the form, you know, the symbolic form. You know, everybody will think that this father has something different with him than this mother. Why? The shape, yes. The fork. It's more dangerous. The spoon is more soft. But the fork is a fork. It's point. So all these things can be used to color your stories, you know. And of course the socks. So, 2 minutes on this happy ending. Why is it important with this happy ending? What did you say? That people don't have a happy ending always. No? They can't. They haven't done so. No. But do you think that making stories with obstacles, that they are solved and that there is a happy ending, can that make that you start to think that there might be a happy ending? Because the obstacles, they were big in this story. But still it was solved and it was a happy ending.